Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. We'll save England and the UK. Lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. But we won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. To save England and the UK.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the English Defence League radio show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. English Defence League Radio, the voice of the EDL. And tonight we have our very own Kel, a.k.a. Red Fox Blogger, tonight. And it's only appropriate that Kel was give herself the nickname Justice. And so, Kel, well thought that, because the show tonight is basically Justice is Served. And we will go on to that in a little bit. I just see someone come sneaking through the cat flap, and that's our very own Mr. Timber, and that's our very own Cat Strangler 101. And I'd like to welcome you both into the studio this evening. Good evening, guys, and I hope you're both well.
Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening, Kel. How are you doing?
Good evening, Tim.
Are you infidelity well this evening, Kel?
I am absolutely infidelity well. Tim, how are you and Jeff? Tim, how are you?
I'm unbelievably well, and may I offer you my most earnest contrafibularities on your well-being?
You're going to send me into a fit of discombobulation again.
Well, maybe later.
And why you don't get them caught in the cat flap in future, Tim.
Yes, indeed.
As I say, Tim, it's really good to see you this evening, and we've got so much that we want to talk about, especially after what we saw yesterday unfold. As you see, Sky was played all day long, basically, and seeing justice being brought upon these two caranimals. But I think that most of us that listen to this radio show, a lot of people would say the only justice really that should have been served on these two caranimals was the hangman's noose. Let's be honest, guys. We know we haven't got capital punishment in this country, but I think, and I was a little bit, I've got to admit, Tim, I was quite happy to see, and I think most of the nation and probably the world was quite happy to see the judge had made a judgment for life imprisonment without parole. But the only blip on that issue was the other person got 45 years with parole after 45 years. So I can't understand, because they both done as much, you know, to poor Lee as each other. You know, one probably more severely, more to the neck, but the other one was limited also. Both of them was involved, and not one of them was worse than the other. They were both the same in that case. And I would say justice would have been seen to be done if they'd have got both the same sentence, and both of them should never, ever be allowed out of these prison walls again. And your thoughts, Kel and Tim, on that point I just raised.
Kel, you first.
Yeah, I was pondering that myself, Jeff and Tim, and that I was trying to ratchet it around in my head as to why the sentencing would be different for Edabolojo as opposed to Edabowale, and that Edabowale received the 40-plus sentence, and Edabolojo, of course, he had received a life sentence, and that he will never see the light of day. And the only conclusion I could come up with is that Edabowale was pretty much led by the nose by Edabolojo, but that does not diminish the fact that he actually was part and parcel of the murder of Lee Rigby, and he was just as culpable in the end. That should have been the only factor that I can think of, Jeff. What do you think, Tim?
I do agree with Jeff in as much as it was a joint enterprise. Both these guys took part in this event, and it's splitting hairs, in my view, to say that one is deserving of less punishment than the other. Having said that, I mean, from what we know of Edabowale, he did have second thoughts about what he'd done about getting into Islam while he was in prison. And I do remember it was said that he'd had some mental problems when he was in prison. I remember saying at the time, well, of course he did. He's a bloody Muslim. Of course he's got mental problems.
Yeah, I remember that.
Joking aside, I suppose it could be argued that, all right, he had second thoughts and showed some remorse in that respect afterwards. Although I always think that when you show remorse after the event, something like that, it should carry proportionately less weight. I mean, if he'd got to the point where he was just about to take part in the killing and then he showed some remorse and was, you know, caught at the same time, then that might be different. But after the event,
well,
I think remorse
if you don't mind just interjecting it, like at the end of when the judge was summing up, they both started shouting, "Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar," and then started attacking the guards even before the sentence was actually read out. And this went on for about 3 minutes, or so of this struggle going on in front of Lee Rigby's family, which that must have been absolutely distressing to see that situation, unfold before their eyes. It must have been very upsetting for them to see that. But they didn't. I don't think there was any remorse shown there when they were attacking the prison guards. They just wanted to make a final statement to the world. Look what we're doing. And even when the judge was reading out what he had to say about these two people, they said that they could still be heard underneath the cells when they got dragged down. They still could be heard fighting and kicking and screaming underneath. So I don't think that I would say that any of them showed any remorse. In fact, the opposite. That's what I found. As I say, the judgment, I would have said, really, in my eyes, he should have given both life. Life without parole for the pair of them. And yes, as you say, one of them had probably mental issues. Yeah, of course, it's after the event, and they realise the severity. If he says, yeah, sort of has some sort of mental issues, then maybe the courts are going a bit lenient more so. And that seems to be the case, Tim. It's open to speculation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people can bounce this back and forward, and I'm sure they will for quite some time. But I agree with you, Jeff, in so much as that it was a joint venture, and given that the outcome was as serious as it was, I think remorse or the lack of it or whatever shown after the event should have had very little to do with the actual sentencing. The guy might have had mental issues, and all right, in my jocular way, I'd say, well, that comes with part and parcel of being a Muslim. But even taking that into consideration, I think the seriousness of the event should have meant that life meant life for both of them. One of the most interesting aspects of the sentencing, I thought, was the judge's remarks that seemed to have kicked off the scenes that we saw in the court, where he said, and I believe I'm quoting correctly, when he said, "You have betrayed the religion of Islam." Now,
yes.
I have some views on that, but before I go into it in more detail,
that was a political correct speech, didn't it? Seems somewhat back down that line, didn't it?
Well, quite. But I thought before I give you my views, I'd pass it back to you and Kel and just get your take on that, because I thought that was a very interesting thing that the judge had to say.
Oh, they certainly got upset over that one, and I just put in the chat room that the judge also said this was a murder with a terrorist connection, and he described the killing as sickening and pitiless. These two characters just went bananas over that one as well. They didn't even have the courtesy to the families. They showed no remorse. Well, you know what? I mean, what is courtesy to these poor animals? It's nothing. It's foreign to them.
No.
But they just had to stick that dagger and twist it a little further and a little faster and stick it to the families again. And these, I can't even imagine being a member of a family member of Lee Rigby and having to sit there and watch these two characters jump up and down like the apes they are and disrupt the courtroom to a point where they're not even willing to take their sentence. They are.
No, the thing about it was, Kel, that the police the police, when this was going on and they were scrappling on the floor, they got dragged to the floor, as it goes, and the police stood in front of the family, so they tried not to let them witness what was actually going on, because it was very, very distressing. And that's who my thoughts were with when I heard this going on. I thought, oh, the poor family, what must be going through them? Was, you know, they listened to the sentence being read out, and I know that they, you know, you just want to see justice being done for Lee, but to see all that must have been so distressing for them. And God bless them, you know, they're very, very dignified in the way they've been with all this outcome and that. But then again, that's just my views. I just felt so sorry for that they had to witness these car animals doing something else to raise to raise their flag once again. We done this. We're not showing our remorse and we're kicking off. Did you know they probably planned it, girl? They planned when they had their day in court, their time, the sentence, that they would do exactly that. Would you not say that, Tim? I mean, it's just to have me pure speculating.
Kel, Tim.
I'm sorry.
Do you want to go first, Kel, or shall I? I don't mind. Kel?
Go ahead, Tim.
Okay. Well, I'm actually not so sure that they would have planned that in advance, Jeff. And the reason I say it is this, that the remarks that seemed to set them off were the statement by the judge that said that you have betrayed your religion, and that upset them. And the reason it upset them is that they were acting Islamically correctly in every respect. I mean, we knew this with Adabajali when he stood in front of the camera just after the killing and quoted Quran chapter 9 verse 29, explaining exactly why he'd done what he had. And it's no different from when he was receiving his sentence in court. As far as he was concerned, yeah, all right, the kuffar are going to hand down a sentence and I'll probably never see the outside world again, but at least I can look Allah in the eye and say everything that I did on that day was an Islamically correct thing to do. That's his mindset, which you could see pretty much in all the reports from the day of the killing right up to and to and including the day of the sentencing. So given that he felt that it was Islamically correct, and I agree with him, it absolutely was Islamically correct for him to do that, when the judge made the statements he did, which was to say you're betraying the religion, Adabajali said that is a lie. And indeed he was quite right. It was a lie. He did not betray the religion at all. He did not betray Islam. He acted absolutely faithfully in accordance with the precepts of Islam and the example of the Prophet Muhammad. So I should think he was quite upset when the judge, the kuffar judge, who of course has got no right to judge him, the only court that he should answer to, of course, in his mind, is a Sharia court. And given that the kuffar judge had the impudence to haul him up in a British non-believer type court and pass a sentence on him, that's an affront. That's an offence to Islam, that is. And he must have been quite upset when the judge said, not only that, not only am I going to sentence you to life imprisonment so you'll never get out, but I'm here to tell you that what you did was a betrayal of your religion, when of course he knows perfectly well
that
it was not.
Do you think he chose those words? Maybe he knew it would kick them both off. You think
well,
he was a...
No, I mean, again, I have to disagree with you, Jeff. I don't think the judge even thought that. I think the judge is part of a judicial system which is so politically correct that the judge probably thought that what he was saying was correct, when in fact it wasn't. He was completely mistaken.
And all he done was inflame them more.
He did. Well, exactly. So I don't think that they planned necessarily to kick off at that point in court.
No.
And I don't think that the judge meant to kick them off with the words that he used. But the judge was so clueless when he used those words because of the politically correct environment that judges are brought up in these days. Did you know, Jeff, there's a judicial selection process whereby if you're selected to become a judge or a magistrate or anybody who's going to pass judgment on others through the system, you actually have to go through a process which more or less purges people who don't have politically correct way of thinking or politically incorrect tendencies. It's actually a process that weeds them out. So by the time they get to be senior,
you mean conditioning them, like a brainwashing?
Well, you could use those words, Jeff. But there is actually a process that judges have to go through to make sure that their decisions are as far as possible influenced by politically correct concepts every step of the way. And I didn't know that till today, but I found that out. So there we go.
This is amazing, isn't it? You know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, when you think about what Sims just said there, that this is a sort of a brainwashing technique which won't be out of touch with, say, something like from Russia or China or something like that. You can't believe that people are being conditioned in our own country so as to install political correctness, to take away the incorrect feelings that they might have, and to install a politically correct ideology. As I was saying, I chose the words because I do believe it's like conditioning, brainwashing someone to believe something that maybe they... He wasn't really interested in political correctness, but maybe they realise that this is the way that they should do things simply, and this keeps the Muslims happy and keeps those other oiks happy.
That's absolutely right, Jeff. And I've actually just found the article that I was referring to. It was a comment that was on New English Review on one of the posts that was there. And if I could just read it out, it only take me about 30 seconds or so. Judges are supposed to be independent, and much is made in the Ministry of Justice about the Judicial Diversity Task Force. Their job is to ensure diversity of physicality, which is to say lots of women, openly gay judges in civil partnerships, ethnic minorities, the more the merrier. But just in case there is any diversity of thought or opinion after selection, they are guided, mentored, or indoctrinated by the Judicial Studies Board. Now, that's something you want to take a look at if you've got Google in front of you. The Judicial Studies Board, whose remit these days goes far beyond its initial purpose of ensuring some sort of consistency in sentencing. While accepting that a case must be judged on its merits and that the judge hears and sees a defendant, they in an office in Westminster, that is to say on the Judicial Studies Board, do not. So that's really something else we could maybe look at, and not necessarily on this show tonight, but it's what guided, in my view, what guided the judge to say what he did. And like you say, it's a form of indoctrination.
He definitely thought it out very, very well before he delivered his sentence on these car animals, didn't he? So he did.
Well, I mean, again, Jeff, I'm not sure I'd agree with you. He probably uttered the words that he did because his political correct indoctrination, presumably through the Judicial Studies Board, led him to say something that he could hardly say anything else. He had to say it was a betrayal of Islam, and when one or both or either of those two guys stood up in the dock and said that is a lie, it is not a betrayal of Islam, they were absolutely correct, and he was absolutely
and he was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found that extremely interesting. Kel, what do you think?
I would agree with that. Kel, your thoughts with what Tim's saying, I didn't really think about it as deep as that, Tim, but well done. And it really makes a lot of sense now, especially the you betrayed Islam sort of thing. Of course, to them, as I say, they called themselves soldiers of Allah. That's the phrase that they was calling themselves, wasn't it? Soldiers of Allah. They thought that what they was doing was they didn't think that anything was wrong because they was just doing, you know, the Quran tells them to do. So they still feel no remorse because as far as they're concerned, they were soldiers and they're still soldiers. And of course, that's the reason why it inflamed them when the judge actually said.
Yes, quite so. I mean, I've just dropped a link into the chat room, which you can have a look at, guys, but I think that was Kel just drawing breath and ready to speak, so I'll pass the mic over to her.
Yeah.
I like that, Kel.
Thank you. I don't know. Tim, you brought up so many points. I don't know which one to address first. There are so many. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to hug this mic and bring up a proposal in that deviating a bit from the article. These two, obviously, they were converts. They converted to Islam. I would like to know who was responsible for this conversion, and I would like to know what mosque they visited. And if that mosque cannot be shut down, because enough is enough of this. I mean, I was reading another article earlier today, and I was relating it to Tim about the radicalization of youth within the Muslim quote-unquote community, and that is becoming quite a problem in the UK. Now, what are we going to do about the radicalization? Like, I know that the younger one, Adab Awali, screamed out that that's a lie, and that the judge did say that they were indeed radicalized. Adab Awali is right. They weren't radicalized. They're good Muslims. They were following the dictates of Islam. They were doing what they were supposed to do. Who was directing these two, though? That is what I'd like to know. What is going on in that mosque that would send them into such a tailspin of what we would consider absolute insanity, in that they would slaughter a hapless person in the middle of the streets during the daytime in London? What is going to happen with that particular mosque? Do they know what mosques they were attending? Do they know what was being preached in those mosques?
I think it was near a Woolwich mosque, I think.
What are they going to do about this mosque? I mean, this imam, these two committed a heinous crime. Who's actually behind it? Who was goading them on? I don't think they were sitting around and just doing it on their own. They were getting inspiration from somewhere, and I can bet you almost 100% sure that it came from that bloody mosque. What next?
There's two things there, Kel, that I'd briefly like to respond to, if I may. One is, although you could perhaps say, well, maybe they spent more time in one mosque than another mosque, and maybe there was one imam they listened to more than they did any other, you could say, is that actually enough to close down that mosque or prosecute that imam? And while I'm sure all of us would like such things to happen, I mean, I certainly would, the problem is that what drove them to this is not so much an individual mosque or an individual imam, it's the ideology. And it goes back to what we were talking about only a day or two ago, Kel, with Vlad on the show. Yeah, but it's the ideology, and we were talking about the example of German soldiers on the streets in the 1940s. It's like taking the rifle off the soldiers and giving them each an ASBO for 5 years, whereas what we should be doing is going after the ideology, because there will always be imams who promote that ideology. There will always be mosques that hold imams that promote the ideology, and what we need to do is to crush the ideology at its source. And it's all very well for us to say, let's go after the imam or the mosque. And certainly, if we can find that a particular imam directly incited them or directly influenced them to do this, then yes, by all means, let's prosecute them. But let's take a step back and look at the wider picture, which is to say, where is all this being driven from? And it's being driven from Islam, the Quran, the example of the Prophet Muhammad. And while a lot of people might look at it and say, well, it's completely insane that somebody should go onto our streets and slaughter a British soldier, in fact, as far as Muslims are concerned, there's nothing insane about it at all. It's a perfectly logical end to the process the indoctrination that Muslims receive, and when they think that they are being oppressed. And of course Muslims consider themselves to be oppressed just by the fact that there are kuffar unbelievers like us drawing breath, breathing Allah's oxygen without permission. That is enough to consider Muslims to be oppressed. So the actions that those guys took are not insane in Islamic terms. They are perfectly logical actions that Muslims would be looking at and saying, yep, that's a perfectly acceptable and logical thing to do. Amongst themselves, obviously, they're not going to say that in front of us. And that comes back to what we were saying about you cannot trust any Muslim to tell the truth in front of or to any non-Muslim if Islam or the prevention of denigration of Islam is involved, or the promotion of Islam involved, that Muslim will lie to you in order to to keep Islam looking bright and shiny and clean.
I hope you don't mind me just interjecting just for a second.
No, go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry, Kel. I've just something that Vito said about the mosque situation. He's saying mosques don't matter, Kel. When judges make misstatements sanitising Islam, how will law enforcement ever even connect dots to mosques? I think that's a very good point that we can go along with. I'm sorry, Kel, that you said he was a finishing point there, but it was just saying it jumped out, and it was going up quick, so I tried to get in there quick. So, yeah, go ahead, Kelsey.
Well, yeah, that is actually the point I was going to bring up in my closing statement in this particular round circle, as it were, and what we're discussing. I do have two comments that I want to share with you, but I'm going to stick with my first comment, and that is there nothing we can do about the mosque. And yes, Jeff and Tim, you're right. There seems to be some sort of immunity. They could not even do this in the United States. They could not shut down the Islamic Society of Boston, for example, and that was the Boston Bombers' house of worship. This particular mosque was under suspicion of, for example, tax fraud. And they were under suspicion of a charity fraud. Nothing could get this mosque shut down. Even the outgoing FBI director at the time, his name was Robert Mueller, he said that although the FBI visited the mosque in the past as part of its outreach to the Muslim community, he was unaware of the Islamist learnings within that particular mosque. And what they would do is that in the United States, and we know this, the FBI has pretty much shut down ties with CARE, Council of American Islamic Relations, because this is such a problem, in that it's part of the outreach. They would say, hey, we're going to be here at such and such a time and such a date. And while the word would get out, and what would happen is that that mosque would be cleaned up nice and tidy, nothing to see here, folks, go away, and thank you for taking off your shoes. And so, yeah, these mosques, they're Teflon. Nothing sticks to them. Nothing can get them shut down because of the political correctness and the very laws they use against us. Now, I'm going to bring up my second comment that I want to share with you. Now, this brutal daylight attack, it raised questions about British intelligence agencies as Adebolajo. He was known to security services, okay? He had been arrested in Kenya in 2010 and deported. Why did this guy slip under the radar? And I'm going to let Jeff take that one first.
Yeah, no, that's some very good points made there, Kel. And, well, could you just clarify that, just that the last point that you just made there, Kel? Because I just
absolutely. Yeah.
Sorry
yep,
about
Jeff,
that, Kel.
I guess
getting something.
Yeah, the point I'm making is that we see this globally. We see this in Canada, the United States, the UK, all over the place, Australia. We see what's going on. These persons go overseas. They may be engaging in jihad, but they're arrested for known crimes, but they're still invited back. They're not deported. They're invited back into the host country. That was the case with Adebolajo. He was known to the security services in Britain as being a hot potato, but nobody paid attention to it. How is it that we can allow these miscreants to sneak back into the countries and get away with what they do?
Well, I think it's a total disgrace, to be quite honest with you, Kel. It just goes to show what we talk about, what's wrong in this country, that these people are allowed to come back into our country. And, you know, and of course, not forgetting, we see a few years ago, one of these Karanimals speaking at a UAF meeting, and you knew it was a UAF meeting, there was all the flags flying there. And he was speaking, and he was talking about the Kufars being like cattle and things like that. He was making some derogatory remarks then, and that was before, maybe a year or so before, 2 years. And he was very much in a tune with Anjan Choudhury. I mean, I don't know if he was one of his converts. Probably was. It's just a shame that this despicable character hasn't been drawn in and pulled in over some of the people that's been coming and going from where he teaches them. And because they all end up being radicalised. And they've been around Anjan Choudhury. These people go on to be radical people. We've seen it with that Richard Dark. We've seen it with all of his converts all end up being radicalised and doing something that you see them doing time in prison. Isn't it about time, ladies and gentlemen, that this Anjan Choudhury is brought in and, made to answer some of these questions? Yes, he might have, he might have been taught in law and things like that. But don't you think, guys, and I know the world, I'm talking to the world, don't you think it's about time the authorities brought this character in and took him off the streets? People like him who sort of encourage these people who probably don't think it was any wrong what they did. And you know what, Andrew, that despicable person. Isn't it about time that those people were dragged off the streets instead of creating these radicalised people that we've been seeing over the last few years? And that's an open-end question, and I talked to my panel, but this is to the world. Isn't it about time, ladies and gentlemen, we took them type of people off our streets totally? Shut them up, shut them down. There you go.
Well, I certainly sympathise with that point of view, Jeff, and I think that there's two ways you could actually look at that. One is, we all know that Anjan Choudhury has been legally trained as a solicitor, and consequently, I'm sure he thinks very carefully about what he says and does, and says to himself, right, well, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to say that, and I'm going to word it in such a way or do it in such a way that I will just stay on the right side of the law as it currently stands. And so far, that strategy seems to have worked very well for him. Now, we could say that we're in a war, okay? Knock on Anjan Choudhury's door and say, I'm sorry, mate, we know you haven't actually broken a law because you've been very clever about what you've been doing, but we now find that partly due to what you've been doing and saying, we are in an ideological war which is likely to last for 100 years. And so therefore, we are going to take you and we are going to lock you up until the worst part of this war is over and we've got it under control and Islam has been constrained and checked, so it's no longer a danger to our civilization. And if that happens to come about within the next 100 years, well, we might just let you out. And we could just take him off the streets and cite national security reasons, lock him up without trial and just suspend the due process of law until such
That's
time...
That's common sense, isn't it, Tim? Let's be honest, mate. It's common sense.
It's one it's one way in which you could deal with Anjem Chowdhury. The problem with that is that once you start suspending the rule of law in an arbitrary fashion, that has consequences, not all of which are necessarily positive, because you might find that depending on how our political elites conduct themselves and who actually stays in power and who comes and goes, you might just find that we get somebody in power who decides to say to themselves, well, look, there's a precedent being set for suspending the due process of law. Let's use it in a way which might not be beneficial to the indigenous people of this country, much as Barack Hussein Obama is doing over in the United States. He's taking unilateral decisions which are bypassing the various checks and balances which have been set up, which are supposed to keep a lid on things like that, and he's causing absolute chaos. So I'd say that although it would be very nice to take Anjem Chowdhury off the streets and cite national security as the reason for doing it, you need to be a little bit careful because it can open up an enormous can of worms. And the second point I want to make, and before I hand the mic over to Kel for a response, is that when you've got somebody like Anjem Chowdhury on the street and he's brought on to BBC Radio 4 or BBC Panorama every time there's a Muslim-related issue, he's actually doing us in the counter-jihad movement a huge favour, because he is showing the true face of Islam when he says, I want to see the black flag of jihad flying over 10 Downing Street, or when he says that he expects that the Parliament will become Muslim-dominated within the next, I don't know, 20 or 30 years or whatever. That is actually helping our cause, because a lot of people who haven't perhaps taken him seriously are suddenly going to start saying to themselves, hey, maybe that guy has a point. Maybe Muslims will become a majority and in key influential political positions in the next 20 or 30 years. And then what will happen to us? And the answer to that is, if you want to know what will happen to you in 20 or 30 years when there's a Muslim majority in these influential areas, you only have to look around the world and learn the lessons of history, because it will not be pleasant for the indigenous British population. So there's two things there, and I'd like to pass the mic over to Kel to see if I can get your response, Kel.
Absolutely. Now, the thing with Anjem Chowdhury, you're right, Tim. He does help the counter-jihadist cause when he goes on these programs such as BBC or Channel 4, and he speaks honestly about the intentions of Islam and its caliphate and their ambitions. But what he is also doing, isn't he technically also engaging in sedition? And is there nothing that can be done about this?
Yes.
It comes to mind, I was watching Eric Stakelback, and he was interviewing Anjem Chowdhury in a park, and it was a nice sunny day, and families were picnicking, and the kids were running around. And Eric Stakelback said, is this what you envisioned for the UK, and that these women and children, that they would not allowed to freely frolic in the sun and play in the park? And Anjem said, yes, because under Sharia, the woman could not be out there alone with their children. They would have to be accompanied by their husband or another close relative. And he set this point blank. And Eric Stakelback deals with a lot of Islamic issues on his radio show and his television show. He's the author of The Terrorist Next Door. And I'm going to get that one right. I just want to make sure I get that right. I'll put a link in the chat room in a moment regarding Eric Stakelback. But even I had never seen Eric Stakelback speechless for like one. He was speechless for only 1 millisecond, but Eric Stakelback, did what?
Yeah. But that's precisely why it's, in my view, it's not such a bad thing to have people like Anjem Chowdhury speaking their mind, because if it helps to wake, you know, if one sentence from Anjem Chowdhury wakes up 1,000 people, let's say, then that has to be a good thing. I mean, I know what we're doing is also a good thing in its way, waking people up little bit by little bit. But when you get somebody like Anjem Chowdhury saying it on Radio 4 or on Panorama, it reaches a wider audience. And just from a logistical point of view, even though the guy is undoubtedly contributing to a national security problem, every time he comes on the TV or on the radio and says these things, what he's doing is incredibly helpful to our cause. So, yeah, I know what you're saying about sedition and treason, and I agree entirely. But if you're looking to defeat somebody in a war, you want to use all the tools that you have available. And as far as I'm concerned, Anjem Chowdhury is a huge, great tool, and I mean that in more than one sense of the word. He's a tool that we can use in the counter-jihad effort. So taking him off the streets, yeah, it might be nice in one respect to teach him a lesson, but when you're looking to win a war, you want to use all the tools at your disposal. But I'll pass it back.
And I just put a link in the chat room regarding Eric Stakelbeck, and yes, he is the author of The Terrorist Next Door. There.
Thank
and
you, Carol. I'll just look at
okay.
That link.
You know what? Yeah, I just put the other link in here. It won't let me paste. Hang on. No, it won't let me paste. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to do this all over again. So my apologies, and let's get this. Come on, be nice, computer. There we are.
Oh, there we go.
His first book was The Terrorist Next Door: How the Government Is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat. That was released in 2011, and he has also he's written numerous publications. He is the television host on CBN television, and that is the Christian Broadcasting Network. And you can find all his videos as well on YouTube if you want to check out Eric Stakelbeck. But yes, this man is a renowned study. He is a renowned scholar on the issues of Islam. And like I was saying, when he was interviewing Anjem Chowdhury, and Anjem Chowdhury came up with that, Eric Stakelbeck had no idea, like, how do you respond to something like that? That the brute honesty of Anjem Chowdhury and the brute honesty of these two characters in which we're discussing today, and that they were just following orders. They were just following the rule of Allah. They were just following the hadiths, and they were just following the Quran. They were following the surahs. And this has got to be something very scary, and I do not understand why our governments are so afraid to address these issues. There is such a thing called radicalization, and they are literally people who want to blow us up or slaughter us in the middle of the London streets during the day. Jeff?
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest, guys. I mean, Theresa May said that Dave was going to be addressing these issues. Tim, have we seen anything constructive from what Theresa May, some of the statements that she's made, that they're going to be looking into the prisons because these are the converts, the Muslim population in the prisons are taking over, sort of thing? Something she said she was going to address. Have we seen any movement in that direction on both of the things that we've been talking about this evening?
Well, if there has been any movement, it hasn't been all that widely publicised, and I'm not personally aware of it. Now, if somebody cares to correct me and drop a link in the chat room, that's absolutely fine. But I regard Theresa May, our wonderful Home Secretary, as being entirely compromised, because she is quite obviously surrounded by advisers who are biased towards Muslims and against the rest of us, and she herself doesn't appear to have a clue. As we know, she was instrumental in banning Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller from the country last June on the basis that they would be a threat to community cohesion, although as it subsequently transpired, it was because they had previously expressed support for Israel, and this was a deciding factor which wasn't made public at the time. But who would have given her that advice? Well, people like Keith Vaz, people like Fiaz Magal, my current best friend, as everybody knows, people in various influential positions in politics who happen to be either Muslim or who happen to be Muslim sympathisers are advising the Home Secretary on what she should and shouldn't do, and she's listening to them. Now, to ban people like Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer for being against community or being a possible threat to community cohesion is totally ridiculous when in the same week or the same month you allow in somebody like Mohamed Alarife, who's on record for saying that it is truly an honour to smash skulls and to sever limbs for the glory of Allah. So while you ban Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller because they're highlighting the fact that Islam has a developed doctrine that mandates war against non-believers, Mohamed Alarife is saying exactly the same thing, only he's in favour of it, and Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller are not. And it's absolutely crazy that Theresa May is making the decisions that she is, but she's doing it because she's advised badly. And what we're seeing, or what we're not seeing in the way of developments in order to protect us from this encroaching threat, is entirely due to the fact that she is completely compromised as a Home Secretary. She should be replaced. I understand you have a caller, Jeff, so I'll hand the mic back to you.
I was going to say, Tim, what Will said on that, those points there. And as I say, guys, ladies and gentlemen, we live, as we've often talked before, in Orwellian times. And it does seem, with the way that Theresa May's and other politicians are going about their businesses, this does seem to be the case. But with that, Sonny, it's good to see you. Your call come in there, so I'm going to pass it over to you. Good to see you this evening. I've got feedback already. Goodness gracious! Back to you, Sonny. Good to hear you.
Hello there, mate. Can you hear us?
Hi, Sonny.
Yeah.
Hi, Sonny.
Hi, Sonny. You all know, I've got my voice back as well, guys, by the way, just to give you a little input. It's back. It's recovered. Now, obviously, I've been listening. There's a few points I wanted to make tonight, because obviously I believe that we're talking about the justice given to Rigby yesterday in court. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I mean, I was Sky News live report every update every 30 seconds, and Michael Adjabalaja, or whatever his name is, he's barrister actually came around in court, and I don't know the word by word, but said something along the lines of it was not intentional. The butchery was not intentional, or it wasn't his fault or something, and said this in court. I mean, come on, this guy butchered a man in the street, and then his barrister is sitting there fighting his cause, saying that he didn't mean to do it or something along those lines. If anyone knows the actual words, like, please enlighten everyone, because it's a hell of a story.
A good point. I mean, I remember them actually mentioning about what their brief was saying, and I was just so angry with some of the statements. Man, what does he mean that he didn't mean to do it? It's quite obvious. He told the cameras, he told everybody out there that this was it, that they were soldiers of Allah, and this is what they done, and they quoted from the Quran. Try to make excuses for these people. I mean, that's all that his barrister was doing. Let's be honest there, Sonny. And it does. It did leave a bad taste in my mouth when I heard it. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to put myself on mute for the moment. Kevin, Tim, could you take over with Sonny for a little while, because I'm getting feedback. My apologies.
You there, Kel?
Yeah, hi, Sonny.
Thing I wanted to say is that these two guys, both of the Michaels, the Quranimals, these guys stated what, like Lee Rigby's family hadn't been through enough. When they were told that they'd been basically, as they converted, they become radical. They then started screaming at Allahu Akbar, and Britain and America will never be safe. But yet again, the court, the Baghdad tried saying that this attack was not a religious attack. If it was not a religious attack, then why are they shouting Allahu Akbar? I mean, these guys are well known to have been under the wing, for instance, of Anjem Chowdhury years and years back, because both of the Michael Adebowale and Abelardo were Catholics at one point and were turned into radicalized to, in the crazy Islamic killers. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, they came from where did they originally come from? They came from, I believe, was it I'm just scrolling down. Yeah, they came from Nigeria. They belonged to Nigerian Christian families before converting to Islam. Yeah, I'm getting a little bit of feedback. So what I'm going to do, Sonny, is I'm just going to mute you for a second and address your question. And yes, when they came from, they came to the UK as children, and they came from very strong Christian families, very strong backgrounds. And then, but that is a question, that's a burning question, Sonny. What is it that made them convert, and what turned them into such Quranimals? And I'm going to unmute you now, Sonny, so that you can answer that.
That's a perfect point you made, because it also states that Michael Adebowale was a star pupil 6 years after the attack happened. Now, my answer for this is quite simply, he did not believe that Islam is dominated preaching and screwing lies. And what has happened is people that like Chowdhury and Abu Izzedine and Mo Ansar have come in and screwed into his head, have gone on the streets and are screwing horrific images and stories into young people's minds, and you have the outcome of someone like Michael Adebowale, and that it ends up with them going massacring people in the name of so-called Allah and the Prophet Muhammad.
And I think that's something that Tim could very handily address as well.
I don't think there's any question that people like Michael Adebowale and Michael Adebowale were influenced by prominent Muslims that we know about. I mean, Anjem Chowdhury's name has been mentioned several times, and of course Adebowale in particular has been photographed at rallies with Anjem Chowdhury, so there's no question that he would have had some influence there. And you're quite right in saying that there are other equally influential preachers out there, like Abu Izzedine, Mo Ansar. I mean, Mo Ansar is not a fire-breathing preacher as such. He's just somebody that puts himself out there as the face of moderate Islam whenever it suits BBC Sunday Morning Politics to bring him on. But nevertheless, I mean, he is a Muslim and must therefore be treated with the same degree of suspicion as people like Abu Izzedine, who is much more of a fire-breathing purveyor of Islamic rhetoric. But yeah, you know, there's no question that there are plenty of people out there who at some stage in their life when they're particularly vulnerable, if they come into contact with these people, and these people tend to be very, very confident in the version of Islam that they're pushing towards these vulnerable people, there may be a lot of people out there who are easily swayed without question. And it comes back to what we were saying earlier, is that at what point do you take these people off the streets and say, okay, we know you haven't actually broken a law as such, but you are still, we are in a war and you are inciting sedition and treason, and therefore we're going to take you off the streets for 100 years or so. If the war is over before then with a bit of luck you might be out early in time for tea with good behaviour. But until then, we're going to just lock you up in a cell and you're going to stay there until Islam is no longer a threat to this country. So that's one way of dealing with them. But the other way is just to let them run, understanding that they will radicalize radicalize some people, but keep tracks on what they're doing and maybe try and pick people up before they get sufficiently radicalized to perform the kind of acts we saw these guys doing. I mean, in this instance, if that was the plan by British intelligence, it obviously failed miserably because they went on to slaughter Lee Rigby. But let me pass the mic back to you and get your comments. Sonny, I don't know what's up with your audio or your microphone, Sonny, but your sound quality is not very good this evening. I don't know if you've got a problem with Skype at your end and you want to try and dial back in, but it's not too good at the minute.
Yeah, I sent Jeff a note about that a few minutes ago. But Jeff, I also sent you a note as to whether or not you want to take a break because you're at the bottom of the hour, and this is usually the time you need to call in, isn't it?
Yes,
call
Cal,
back
yes,
in.
Yes, I was just because I was letting the flow of the conversation. But as I say, it was sunny. It was breaking really bad, wasn't it? I had to put myself on mute myself because every time he was talking, I was getting feedback, echo, and all that as well, Cal. So I think we need to take a little short break, and I need to call back in. Thank you, Cal.
You're welcome, Jeff. And what we're going to do is we are going to take this break, and we're going to see everybody back here in 4.5 minutes. This is a song, though, honoring Lee Rigby. This is from Madison Rising. It's called Walking Through That Door. So gentlemen and ladies and gentlemen, refresh your teas. We'll see you back here soon.
Thank you, Kel, for that. That was absolutely a fantastic tune that you played there. I was just as I called back in, I was having a look at, I've got to thank Kel and everybody for the great slides that we've got on the show this evening. And it's just, I've just been looking at them and some flags. It's obviously sunny on there. And our Glenn holding up the flag, and some great pictures of the EDL and foot soldiers, the English Defence League. You are the best. One of the little slides there as well. So guys, if you get a chance, check out the slides. Kel, thank you so much for the great work that you do with these slides. It's fantastic. Anyway, come back into the studio. I was just come to have a quick look at them, just say exactly to some of our listeners that can't see those slides at this moment in time. So yeah, as I say, it looks like we've got Sunny back, and I was wondering if we'll give you another go here, Sunny, because we was getting some horrific. I was getting horrific feedback and that. So hopefully you. Hopefully you're okay this time. Sunny, welcome back there, brother. Good to... Go ahead, mate.
Hello there, mate. How's the feedback now? Is it coming to all right?
Yeah, I can actually... It's much better this time around.
Fantastic.
I don't know. It is.
Oh.
It's much better, isn't it, Kel? But, Sunny, it was good to see... on one of those slides, you and Glenn holding the flag out, and it was great to see that as well.
I mean, as I say, one thing I will say is to all the Patriots that did attend for the Lee Rigby's Killers, it was great to see you all there. It's just a shame that once again we had people from the likes of BNP that ruined it and ended up getting people arrested.
Yes.
But to all the Patriots, a big well done. No EDL were arrested. It was very good, and anyone that says different, it wasn't. We had morons from the BNP that were chanting all day and obviously weren't there for the right reasons, which I found very disrespectful.
I would agree with that statement there, Sunny. The English Defence League, our members done us all proud yesterday, and as we saw these Muppets on the megaphones trying to make their own agenda and causing problems and causing people to be arrested and that sort of thing. So I was, totally respect for all the boys and the girls that turned up to show their support for Lee Rigby's family yesterday. I salute you all, guys. Would you not agree, Kel? A fantastic job. Because every time when Sky was mentioned, he said EDL members there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do agree.
There. You know, they were saying EDL members. It wasn't mentioning anything about these other splinter groups and the BNP and all that, was they, Sonny? Did you notice that? It wasn't mentioning any of them.
Another
totally
thing
dignified of what our lads and lasses done. So a big salute to you all.
A big thing as well that once again has enraged me to the point of winding me right up is the fact that the police made out of all the far right wing protesters that have been arrested, but there's now video evidence all over Facebook of these so-called, but basically that Muslims and other people have turned around and said, we're going to turn out because these people have made Islam look so-and-so. People were there shouting Allah Akbar for about 3-4 hours, like interval after interval, constantly shouting it. I mean, that is just pure ridiculous. I mean, it's so undignified, it's unreal, you know. It's just disgusting.
I would agree. I think it is, Sonny, I would agree with you. I mean, these people talk about totally disrespectful to Lee Rigby and his family, shouting out Allah Akbars and all that. I mean, it's I would say that with our lads and lasses, it was totally dignified, and they didn't rise to the bait. They did not rise to it, and like they've done on so many occasions, and this is why I'm so proud to be a part of this great organisation, Sonny, because they are, there's confrontations all the time. These boys and girls, they stand the ground, they do what the rightful thing is to do. They don't, there's no confrontation, they don't go running doing this and that. They stand the ground, and they was there for the right reasons to support Lee Rigby's family to hear the sentencing, and they stayed there until it was over, until the police fans drove away. Most of our lads and lassies stayed there right to the end. So what can I say? Total respect to all of them, and it's just a shame that these other groups of people there didn't have the same dignity and respect that our lads and lassies had. Would you not say that, Sonny?
Well, yeah, I mean, another that's perfect. I mean, I was, when you went off earlier, I was on a good conversation with Cal. Mr. Justice Sweeney, that was doing the court proceedings yesterday, actually said that the attack from both men wasn't a religious attack. However, it clearly states that they did it as soldiers of Islam. It's just me being thick or if I'm missing something, but slaying someone in the name of Islam and for Allah is a religious attack, unless I'm missing something, you know?
No, you're not missing something. It's that he just tried to misinterpret exactly of what went on, and he's trying to deflect the main issue. It was a religious attack. It was a hatred crime. And when you try to deflect and to try to deflect it, because what they're trying to do is deflect it away from Islam. That is what they're doing. And it's disgraceful, because where does it all come from? That horrible book, those verses that we time and time again. It's those verses that create these problems. And, you know, we've often said it. They're never going to sort of upgrade their book and bring it into the 21st century. They like it as it is. They'd like it to be, you know, so barbaric and horrific and allows this and all the horrific things that we abhor, that book agrees to. It's disgraceful, absolutely disgraceful. I you know, Sonny, they should actually just ban it. Ban Islam, ban the bloody Quran a lot, you know, because that's how it gets you, you think. All the time we've got Islam in the world, ladies and gentlemen, all the time we're going to have problems. 95% of the issues and problems around the world is Islamic related. And I ain't giving you no bullshit. These are facts and statistics. Okay, guys, that is the truth. All the time we got this so-called, I hate that, using that, religion of peace. Didn't it make you feel sick? You know, when these people use it in that way, they, you know, trying to deflect what it really is. It's a book of evil, you know. Oh,
well,
sorry, I'm going on one. My apologies to the panel.
I have got one actually to pull out there for you, Jeff. I actually read something really interesting, going off the subject a little bit here. A big thing nowadays, obviously, halal meat. See, Muslims say that buying in shops they can only eat halal. Now, I was watching something earlier, and it was very clever, that back in the day of the so-called Prophet Muhammad,
He lived in a multicultural place where Jews, Christians and Muslims all lived together. Now, the one day, it's a famous story, and it's actually in the Quran, of a Jew, I'm sure of it, or some sort of Islamic book, that a Jewish mother of four cooked sheep or something like that for Muhammad. And they said, obviously, we can't eat it. And they said, as long as you pray to Allah first, or you say Bismallah, or I think it is, it's commercial for the money. Because it was never like that. And this is one thing to get out to our users. So when they're saying, we demand that we have it, we have to have it. No, you don't, because your little prophet Muhammad, so to speak, going back to history, has had all sorts, as long as he prays to Allah before eating it and takes it off Allah and Bismallah and all this, they can eat it. But I'll get that.
There you go. Well, that's a good point that you bring up there, Sammy. And I think it is in one of the hadiths that you was talking about, Sir Tim or Kel. Well, it's one of the hadiths. I do remember this. That story, or was it a surah? Was it one of the surahs? I'm not sure. It could be a surah.
Yeah,
one of the surahs.
Yeah, the surah.
Yeah,
well,
thanks, Sammy. I wasn't sure which hadith or the surah, but yeah, it's the surah. But very good point, and that's something that. You know, the hypocritical thing about where Islam's concerned, that they don't need to eat other things. They can eat meat, and as long as they say their prayer. That's something that we haven't gone over before, have we, guys? We haven't talked about that issue before.
Well, I think we did briefly touch on it a couple of weeks ago in the subject of necessity versus obligation, Jeff. I don't know if you recall that, but it was something that Dr. Bill Warner brought up, and he gave the example of what does a Muslim do if he's adrift in a lifeboat and there's nothing else in the lifeboat except 1,000 tins of Spam? Does he eat the Spam and thereby incur Allah's wrath, or does he starve to death? You know, in which case that would arguably be worse for him anyway. And the answer to that is that the Muslim is perfectly at liberty to eat a pork-based product if the necessity overrides his obligation, which he obviously would in this case. And as Sonny so rightly said, if he says a prayer over the meat, then effectively he's taking away the sin of eating pork in order to save his own life, and Allah will smile on him, and he won't be facing hellfire on the day of judgment, and that's the way it works. And of course, what leads on from that is that all such obligations that Muslims make such a fuss about, they must do this, they must do that, they must do the other, in fact, necessity can just be, it can just mean the kuffar saying no. Enough is enough. You will do as we say. And if the kuffar says that forcefully and strongly enough, so that the Muslim has no choice but to obey, then necessity trumps obligation, and he can say to Allah, well, you know, I was going to do it this way, but the kuffar says I can't, and so necessity trumps obligation. And Allah will say, yep, that's all right, me old son, you go right ahead. If the kuffar says you can't do it, me old son, don't you worry. You know, you just go ahead and do it, mate. That's actually how Allah speaks, you know. He's a cockney. Now, not a lot of people know this, but Allah is actually a cockney. And he goes, go blimey, mate, apples and pears, know what I mean, eh, governor? Caught me bang to rights, you have.
Tim, that's another fact where you got on your head, mate.
So there's a little Islamic fact.
You've got
for
a cockney factor now.
That's right. A little Islamic fact for you, that Allah's a cockney. But going in all seriousness, yes, necessity trumps obligation, and they only have to, in the case of food, which might otherwise be prohibited, they only have to say a prayer, and all is fine with the world. So Sonny is absolutely correct.
Yeah, well said, Sonny. Kel, your thoughts with what we've just been discussing?
I just to let you know that Sonny's call dropped.
Oh my goodness, mate. Oh, dear. There's a few technical problems there.
Oh, well, that'll be Allah showing his displeasure by dropping Sonny's call. He probably meant to drop mine, but he was laughing so hard he dropped the wrong call. So never mind, Allah. Don't you worry, mate. I know what side you're on, really. So I'm sure when Sonny comes back, he'll probably be able to come back with the exact surah, because I haven't got the surah in front of me. But we did discuss that, and certainly necessity trumps obligation is something that we should take into account every time we deal with another whining, moaning Muslim who wants to have things all their own way, and is looking for us to appease them. We just have to say no. No more appeasement. You do things our way or the highway. And if we did that a little more forcefully, a little more often, we would not be creating the rod for our own back that we have created over the past 30 or 40 years.
Well said, sir. I've just noticed we've got Sonny back, so let's bring him back in. Sonny, as I say, that's what you was talking about from the surah. Thank you for highlighting that. That's a very good point. It's something that we do like to get our teeth into some of the issues, and you raising that point was great to see this evening as well. So thank you for that. Would you like to carry on from what you just talked about the surah there, Sonny, at all? Anything more you'd like to talk about that?
Not on that subject, but there is one thing I would like to say. I've been told about a date. On the 24th of May 2014, they will be, it's neutral, it's from the Lee Rigby family themselves, it's going to be a peace walk, a Lee Rigby peace walk outside Woolwich Barracks. That'll get out there. It's strictly no alcohol. It's just going to be a walk to remember that very brave, brave soldier that was took away from us by two absolute animals that shouldn't be on this earth.
So is this going... I know you said it's going to be a peace walk. Is this going to be led by the English Defence League, or is this just going to be, normal civilians, citizens?
As I say, the English Defence League will be there as a group. As I say, it will be colours and stuff. I've spoke to it can be colours, but the civilians are going to be there. Their family are going to be there as well. So I think anyone that wants to turn out, I'm definitely going to go and show my support for that family and everything them poor people have been through.
Yes, I agree, Sonny. And that's the 24th of May, correct, Sonny?
Yeah, that's the 24th of May at the White Horse in Woolwich.
At Whitehall. Starting from Whitehall, yes?
White Horse.
White Horse, oh, my apology. I know exactly where you're talking about now. Yes, yes, okay.
Yeah
the White Horse, the pub, yes?
Yep, that's correct, mate.
Yeah, I know it very well, mate. Yes, so there you go, ladies and gentlemen. There's a date for you. Especially some of our members out there. The 24th of May from the White Horse, there'll be a dignified walk on behalf of Lee Rigby and his family. So hopefully we'll see a lot of people be turning up for that day. I know Sonny's going to be turning up, and I know there'll be a lot of people turn up for that day. So thank you for that little bit of information there. We've got another date coming up soon as well, haven't we? Is it the 22nd of April? We've got Worcester, isn't it? Worcester, the
March
demo,
March,
isn't it?
22nd
of
March.
Oh, sorry, March.
22nd
of March.
We don't know what's happening. Well, me personally, I've been keeping a very close eye on it. We're actually struggling to find out whether it's going to be going ahead due to the major flooding down there. But we should find out.
Oh, my goodness, say yes.
But we will find out in the next week if we are.
Yeah, keep us apprised of it so we can keep our listeners informed of how it's progressing.
Yeah, well, I said I will be there no matter what. If I have to wade my way through Worcester, I will be there. So,
pleasure, Sonny. Good man. But yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for giving us the updates on them. And so you'll keep us apprised of the situation as well, won't you? Of you know, how things are going, because as I say, because of the flooding, ladies and gentlemen, it has sometimes, you know, we're not too sure at this moment in time if it's still going to be going ahead. But I'm sure if it can, and without the, you know, too much water being around, that they won't have to row their way down. They won't. You won't be coming down the road. You'll be rowing your way down the road, won't you, Sonny?
Yeah, well, exactly. I've been thinking to myself, maybe this is someone's way of trying to drift Islam out of this country by flooding it and deporting Islam. Full stop, out of the country. I mean, come on, guys. This is a message, you know?
Yeah, good point there, Sonny. Oh my goodness me, I've never thought of it like that, but yeah, I can see that that's a good point there. But yeah, just before we move on a little bit, I'm surprised how quick the time is going this evening. But I'd just like to give a mention. We've got quite a busy chat room this evening, as we normally have, and we will do. We'll be doing a roll call in probably about 5 minutes or so. But I was going to say, guys, if any of you want to maybe call in, maybe your views of, you know, the sentencing yesterday of those Quranimals, maybe you'd like to. The numbers call in. If you're a Skype, if you've got Skype and you're a Blog Talk Radio user, if you left-click on the S button, the Skype button, follow the prompts, and when it says, do you want to speak to the host or do you want to listen, you'll press 1 on your device. But if you're outside the USA, the number to call in is 001-858-777-5934. Repeat, 001-858-777-5934. So maybe some of the things that we've been discussing this evening, maybe you'd like to call in and maybe express your views and how you thought the judge summed things up. So with that, Tim, I'm going to, or Kel, I'll pass it over to one of you guys.
Okay, one of us guys. Okay, are we Kel, Tim? Because when you say I'm going to pass it to one of you guys, we're not sure which one should be jumping in, and we don't want to take away from the flow of the program, that's all. So,
well,
you know what, I'll pass it
you
to
go
Tim.
Ahead, Kim.
Tim? No, Tim, go right ahead.
Oh, dear, after all that, I've completely lost my thread. But, yeah, I was just thinking, Jeff, if you've got did I hear you say that you've just got somebody on the line, or did I just misunderstand that just now? Obviously,
no,
I did.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
Sonny dropped, but he's come. He's back. Sort of thing. So,
yeah.
No, go ahead, Tim. What are you saying?
No. I was going to say if Kel wanted to chip in there, because I was looking something up on Google, and I'm going to come clean. I didn't hear the last bit of the sentence, and I'm trying to wing it here without letting everybody know that I've not been paying attention for the last 30 seconds. So all right, I'm busted. You caught
Tim,
me, everybody.
Tim,
so away
take,
you
go. Go stand in the corner and take your name.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I'll take my own name. I'll write myself up, because we haven't got Tommy with me tonight to do it. So I'm gonna have to write myself up tonight.
Yes, we've made a note anyway. But yeah, well, at least you come. The thing about it, at least you were honest, Tim. That you wasn't playing a bloody tension, and why not?
No, I was busy Googling, actually, and I found, amongst other things, a link for Bill Warner's Necessity and Obligation. I dropped that in the chat room, and then I noticed
Lovely.
That Kel had already done it about 5 minutes earlier, and I thought, well, I'll have to try and find something original to drop in, and I completely lost my thread on the show, so I apologise, but there you go. That's what happens when men multitask, isn't it, ladies? They get into a terrible pickle.
Thanks. Sorry about that. Tim. I've just totally lost track of what I was saying. Yeah, you're back, aren't you? Sonny, you're back with us now,
mate. Weren't you going to say something about the Alzheimer's division of the EDL, Jeff? How's that coming along?
I was going to ask you the same, but I forgot to ask the question.
I know, it's terrible. I keep losing my notes on the subject. One of these days, we're going to actually have a division, an Alzheimer's division of the EDL, and you and I are going to be right at the top of the list, aren't we, to get into that division.
I agree. Kel, there was a question that you was going to ask or something a second ago.
This is where Kel jumps in and says, oh, no, there wasn't a question. Let me throw the mic back to Tim.
my apologies. I just never know when to jump in. I don't like jumping in. I need a very, very tight format, and that when I'm specifically asked something, I'm more than happy to come on board. But when I hear Tim Kel, I'm not quite sure when you want me to speak. So I have been a little on the quiet side. My apologies to your listeners, Jeff, for that. And I'm getting feedback. And what I'm going to do is that I want to address some of Sonny's concerns. And I want to ask Sonny a question, actually. And I'm going to preface it as a comment, and then I have a question for Sonny. And that is, when you see these stories, and we have been hashing this back and forth all evening, I know that, but when you also come across stories, Sonny, and I just got you on mute for a sec so that I can get this out, and not get the feedback. But when you read these stories at the end, they're not sensationalistic stories anymore. This is just part and parcel of the life of Islam. And what frustrates me is that there are reports out there in which they talk about the increasing radicalization of Muslim youth in the UK. And they are. We are witnessing that. We're witnessing the Islamic no-go zones. We're witnessing the grooming gangs, the rapes. Now we have this devastating story, a soldier slaughtered in the streets of London. And Sonny, as a young man living it, how do you think you're going to perceive things down the road in the UK, say, in about 20 years when you're still a young man? Sonny?
I mean, that is a very good question, because like you said, with that, it's becoming very hard for children of our sort of era at the minute, because there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of stuff being told into it, like Islam are promising goods and, mm-hmm. and so much to so many people, and they go, oh, it's brilliant, like that's the way forward, when actually it's not. I mean, I've got a story in the town I live in. There's a Muslim convert lady who is now doing, she's been invited into schools, into primary schools. So this is anything from the age of 6 to around about the age of 11. And she's preaching in schools. I mean, they're allowed mm-hmm. to happen. These young people are going to be Islam because they're having days out in mosques and going to, obviously having hate preachers in schools and converts and stuff. But when I said myself, I will go in there and I want to talk to them about the insult and the threat of Islam. I was told that I could not do so because it was racist and I would offend too many Muslims in the area.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing that worries me is that it's going to get to a point where you're going to be not only battling a lame government, but you're going to be battling these Quranimals that are taking over the streets. And I actually was quoting from this article, and this is from Liberty GB, and this is, young British Muslims are more, not less, extreme. And there is a quote here, and this is from the Islamic Banner of July of 1986, and I'll just recite it. It was heartening to see the many different nationalities, Jamaican, Malaysian, Arab, Pakistani, English, Bengali, and others at the gathering. This affirms a growing awareness of the need for a Muslim community, i.e. Ummah, devoid of ethnic, territorial, micro-religious, or political divides. Now, that stinks to me of caliphate.
I also see it as very cruel as well, because obviously we know in the UK we've got more Muslim schools on the increase where they're Muslim-only schools. I mean, you've got young lads, like you said, from Nigeria, Jamaica, from several different cultures that are being brought up into Islam. And it's quite scary because these people could have really bright futures and everything else. And like we said earlier about Michael Adjibalajo, he was a Christian, and they're turning them into psychopathic terrorists that are being told to go out and blow people up. I mean, in Afghanistan, they've got little children from kindergarten, and they're teaching them how to make bombs and IEDs and stuff. I mean, no one wants that for their children, and I'm quite certain England doesn't want that for our children. That is not the way England works, America or any other state. We don't want. I mean, this is serious, guys. I mean, we need to get it out. England is being took over. The increase of Muslim grooming gangs, of little girls being raped, of soldiers being murdered, pensioners beat up, children becoming radical and killing their own their own countrymen in the name of something no one can prove. So, Carl, that's a point, you know?
Yeah, exactly, Scotty. Exactly. And in reading this article, it is absolutely fascinating in that it's so bold. It's in our face. It's straight here. And our governments won't do a damn thing about it. But, Sonny, do you have maybe a synopsis of what you're going to see in the future if this goes unchecked?
Yeah. But just before I answer that question, I will say that, ladies and gentlemen, the thing I always say is Cameron will not stand up and do anything about stuff like grooming gangs. The simple fact is his kids and the MP's kids are all fine because they're in private little schools where they will never be touched. He doesn't care about the common people because, as far as he's concerned, his kids are fine.
Mm-hmm.
Back onto your question, how will it affect us? In the future, the way things are going at the minute, I'm reading articles like the one I mentioned last week about in Bristol with the two young Muslim kids that beat a pensioner, a 78-year-old pensioner, near to death. In 20 years' time, if this is not stopped, we will have Islam flying everywhere. We will have grooming gangs will be a part of everyday life. The thing is, they're trying to get Sharia law into this country, and there is now a Sharia law state in Britain, an Islamic state, and that is going to happen. Where they are going out, they are beating people up, drinking, gambling, smoking. You give this, like you said, Carl, 20 years down the line, and having your daughter or son go missing and being groomed will just be something that is within the law. That is something that will be allowed to be done, and it don't seem as serious at the minute, but God, if you could see what is happening out there in some of the big cities. I mean, it's incredible. Like, people are having their kids abducted. You're having soldiers behead. Like, who would have ever thought that someone would have the nut to behead a terrorist outside the barracks? I mean, these people, they're getting relentless. They're doing whatever they want to. I mean, it is going to get worse and worse. There are going to be, Mike Adjibalajo said, Britain and America will never be safe. Mm-hmm. That is a serious, people see it as just words. That is a serious threat. That they said something similar when they bombed in London, and then Lee Rigby happened, and so many different things. But I think that's a brilliant point, Cal, that you've got out there, because from my point of growing up to a young age, it's very serious. I mean, I was bullied, and it started when I was younger with the bullying and trying the white and the black race, because they want to be dominant. And these were school kids. These were, what, 11-year-old kids that were bullying me.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I mean, when they were bullying me, I'm not about serious bullying, like getting in gangs and literally beating me to the point where I was black and blue. If they're doing that at a young age, what the hell are they going to be doing when they get to the age of 20, when they've grown up and they've realised they can buy weapons and they can go off to terrorist camps and they can do whatever they want to, and they can drive and run cars into buildings and stuff? I mean, it is serious, Kel, like you said, if we don't stop it, ladies and gentlemen, in 20 years' time, that they won't be in England. If we don't put a halt to it as soon as possible, I mean, it's just going to be devastating, absolutely devastating. It's such an unreal threat at the minute that people don't believe it. But I can't say enough that
it's going to start getting really. I mean, it's bad enough as it is. I don't even want to think about what would happen if this carries on like 20 years down the line. To be honest with you, Gal.
Oh, Sonny, I absolutely agree with this. Is that there is a dire situation going on out there, and that if we don't pay attention to it, what are we leaving to our generations after us? What are we going to do about this, ladies and gentlemen? I implore you, as a person who loves her country, who loves the United States, who loves the UK, Australia, New Zealand, who loves the Western world. If we don't help out people like Sonny, who are living it right here and right now, if we do nothing, if we sit back and do nothing, what is our legacy going to be to them? And Sonny, he brought up a really good point in that they are bullying people like Sonny in the schoolyard at 11 years of age. And Sonny's right. Where are they going to be in another 10 years? Well, 7 years. And they do. They run off to these jihadi camps, and they come back, and they are radicalized. They go to these mosques, and they listen to the imams. They become radicalized. And we end up with people like Ada Bolajo and Ada Balawi. This is what our legacy is going to be. No, not on my watch. Not on my watch, one bit. And you know what? I want Tim to address this, Tim.
Yeah, well, I have to agree with both of you in so far as if nothing is done, everything that you say will come about, and I'm not saying that for dramatic effect. I'm saying it because I've researched what happens in history if Islam is allowed to expand unrestrained and checked. Amongst indigenous populations, and it spreads like a cancer, and there is no stopping it. It will not stop of its own accord. It has to be forcefully stopped, and if it's not stopped, it will destroy the host society, as it has done in plenty of examples over the course of history. The one I like to use as an example when I'm talking in this way is Lebanon, because it's one of the most recent, and only a couple of generations ago it was a thriving, predominantly Christian community, not so very different from our population in the UK now, insofar as it was so considered to be so cosmopolitan and such an example of how multitudes of different people could live together in relative peace, that Beirut, the capital of Lebanon, was called the Paris of the East for that very reason. And then a couple of generations ago, and although I'm not 100% fully cognizant with Lebanon politics from 40 or 50 years ago, they decided to open the borders to large populations of Muslims. For some reason, they thought it would be a good idea, and within a very short period of time, they were embroiled in a civil war which lasted 20, 30 years, caused hundreds of thousands of deaths, and the relatively peaceful Christians who lived in Lebanon largely fled, and now Lebanon is a majority Muslim country, with everything that implies. And could you say that it's an improvement on what was there before? Well, of course you couldn't, because Islam has a very poor civilizational model. Wherever it's implemented, it's far, far worse than what it replaces, if what it's replacing is the Judeo-Christian civilizational model. And it will be what will happen to our country if we allow it to happen. Now, at the moment, we're sleepwalking into exactly the same position as the Lebanese were walking into, sleepwalking into 40 or 50 years ago. But we do have an awful lot of things on our side that the Lebanese of that time didn't have. Like, we have the internet, which helps us to at least summarize what the problem is and explain it in terms which can be easily understood to people if only they listen, if only they open their eyes and their ears and listen to what we have to say. And we've got through Blog Talk Radio, through Facebook, Twitter, other forms of social media, we have the means of disseminating that information. And again, that's something that perhaps couldn't have been easily done a couple of years, a couple of generations ago in a country like Lebanon. So we have things on our side, but what we must not do is let the existing political elites have their own way for a moment longer, because what they will do is sell out this country to Islam, and we will all be worse off as a result. So yeah, I agree with you both, Sonny and Kel. It's a dire situation, but it is not irretrievable. We have a window of opportunity, and if we make the most of that opportunity, we can turn it round, and it just needs to wake up a critical mass of the population for that to happen. So never give up is what I say. That's my message. Never give up.
No surrender.
No surrender.
And, yep, hey, Jeff, welcome back. Glad we got
you
back.
Thank you, Kel. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm sorry about these guys. I was getting a lot of feedback this evening, and it was really killing my ears, and I couldn't hear the flow of the conversation. But what I did, the story that Sonny was telling us, guys, was very similar to Tommy. Did you not see the similarity that when Tommy done that story of his life at school, of him being beaten up, he went to put his hand out and got beaten up by that Muslim crowd? Doesn't that ring familiar with the story that Sonny was relaying to us a few moments ago, Kel and Tim?
Well, it should do. It should do, because Muslims behave in exactly the same way whenever they feel they have an opportunity. So it's hardly surprising that we hear similar stories from two people in different different times, different locations. If the circumstances are the same, the outcome is going to be the same. With Muslims, it's entirely predictable. You can almost tell what their behaviour is going to be by knowing what their population levels are at any given point in percentage terms compared to the rest of the population. So it's hardly surprising that we do hear these similar stories. But yes, you're absolutely right. It's very, very remarkably similar.
I agree, Tim. As I say, when I was listening to what Sonny was saying, I was thinking, my goodness me, it's like it was like listening to Tommy's story. So I thought I'd just like to talk about that just for a second, because it was so that familiar ring. And as you say, it's what Muslims do. But yeah, as I say, guys, you know, sometimes you might listen to the show and think it's sounds like a bit of despair going on. But there's not despair all the time. The English Defence League is here. All the time we stand up there and we go to areas and pinpoint the issues, and there's always hope, there's always a light. We know it's a half-light. We know that there are things against us. We know we're up against the elitists. When we know, you know, we got problems from all sides. But you know what? We're still here, and we will continue doing what we do because, as we said, what else can you do? It's time, you know, for just wagging fingers and talking in pubs about it. It's over. It's time to become more proactive in what we've been doing. So I would say to anybody out there who thinks, yourself, yeah, I've got to do something, please, you know, we're asking you, you know, this is, you know, it's your country. Wherever you might live, or whatever country you might live, you probably experience the same issues what we got over here. Maybe not quite as bad, but I can guarantee you, you will get the same problems of what we've been talking about this evening and on shows what we've had before. So that's what we're saying. You become more proactive, guys. Become more proactive. And we will defeat this evil out there, because that's what it is evil. And we will, good will also overcome evil. And yes, it might, you know, it might take a while, but I guarantee we will prevail. That's it. We can't afford to fail our future generations. It's our right to protect and nourish what we've got, even though, sadly, we've got elitists who've been many years now trying to take away our future generations' heritage. Well, we're not going to let them, not without a fight anyway. Kel, Tim, or Tim.
You're doing it again. You're doing it again.
Kel,
I know.
Well, I think we should do the gentlemanly thing and pass the mic over to Kel first of all.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, Kel.
there's a lot. There's a lot I can talk about here in that everybody knows that I'm a huge motor mouth. I'm all over Blog Talk Radio, as everybody knows. I think I do probably about 12 shows a week now, which is fine with me because I do like to talk. But you know what I wanted to do, Jeff, before we do sign off? We're down to our last 10 minutes or so of talking points in that. We should very much thank everybody who joined us today. And, of course, you've been listening yes. to EDL Radio with your host, Jeff Mitchell, and his panelist tonight is me. I'm Kel Fritzy of the Red Fox Blogger and Freedom Loving Infidels at Radio Jihad Network, along with my co-host, Tim, who is also the panelist tonight. We have had a wonderful call from Sunny tonight. We have Sunny joining us in the studio, but we have people in the chat room. We have A12 Iggy Mum. We have Agador, Bigfoot, Darren Ward, Eric Kyle, numerous guests, Golf Dogs, Stanger, my voice, and
Yay.
Vito Esposito, mine and Tim's boss. But last but never least, Jeff, we also have our sweet Sue from New Mexico joining us on the line. There you go. I just wanted to get that in there. There you go, Jeff.
Thank you, Kel. Thank you for a great roll call as well. I would like to thank you all for being here in the chat room and supporting the show as you do week in, week out. And as I say, we was doing a little bit of a debriefing on what went on yesterday and our views and like Sonny calling to express different things that happened during the case yesterday. Some of it was absolutely horrific, especially for Paulie Rigby's family to experience. But, you know, I think we've covered a lot of the issues that we wanted to do this evening and show our total respect for Lee Rigby and his family for this evening, and I think we've done that, and you know, and we'll never forget that event. It's ingrained on our minds for the rest of our lives, isn't it, Kel? It's like 7/7, it's like 9/11. These events is never
yeah.
ever being forgot. And do you know what I'm going to call once again? Is what I think Glenn said it. Other people said it. Don't you think there was when Stephen Lawrence was murdered by a group of people going back a while ago, there was a plaque put in his place, and he wasn't a soldier or anything like that. It was just it was classed as a race thing, and as you know, there was the Lawrence Inquiry. We all knew, you know, what was going on, and it did change the whole face of the way that the law, the police done their duty, this, that, and the other. I can't remember. Was there a Huntington report or something like that, wasn't it, Sim? Something like that it was. But
hang on a second. We're not talking about the McPherson report, are we?
That's it, the McPherson report. Sorry, I'm totally blank. Yeah, but they changed the whole thing and basically calling the police racist, wasn't they? That's what they...
Yeah, that's the McPherson report, Jeff. Yes, you're right. That's the McPherson report.
And after the event, after all that and what went on, there was a plaque. There was a plaque put up on behalf of Stephen Lawrence. I would say, and this is the question that's been put to the Woolwich councillors about maybe a monument or a statue being put up in Lee's on behalf of Lee. And they've said no. They put a firm no on it. Do you not think, ladies and gentlemen, that these councillors should be made to see the errors of their ways? Because it's what the people want. It's what this probably his family wants. It's what we all want. That this young man met his death in an untimely. He didn't meet it on no battlefield. He met it on the streets of London, his home. And I think This is something that we should really gear up for, Tim Kell, and all of our anti-jihadist movement out there. This is something we must fight for, to get a plaque or a statue, something that represents Lee Rigby. And this is what I think we've talked about before, but I really want to push for this now, guys. So your thoughts, because we've got to close the show down soon. Kel, your thoughts about what just mentioned then?
Let's work on it. Let's work on it. Everybody in the chat room, wave if you think there should be a plaque or a statue for Lee Rigby in a beautiful park for everybody to remember Lee Rigby. I'm waving. I'm waving like mad. Come on, everybody. Get those waves out there because this is what we want to see.
We want the world to wave. We want the world to wave because we want it. We, the people, want a monument or something fitting of Lee Rigby, who was a great, great guy, and a family man and a soldier. That's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be really gearing up for this. So let's push it, guys. But once again, I've got to thank everybody that's been as a part of the chat room this evening. I've had a few technical issues with feedback, and my apologies because I've been a little bit quieter than normally. Maybe that's a blessing. But stop
you
laughing, Kel. You're not supposed to laugh. She's giggling away there. But no, I've got to thank you all for once again being here and supporting the show. So we've got another show tomorrow night, so I'm really looking forward to that. But Kel and Tim, and also Sunny. Sunny, it was a great call. I'm spoiled a little bit because I was getting feedback, and my apologies about that. But these things do happen. But I've got to thank everybody. Of course, not forgetting all the our listening audience out there, wherever you might be, we got to thank. If there wasn't you, there wouldn't be us. So thank you for your continued support for the English Defence League radio show. So, guys, how long have we got? Kel, how long have we got left now? What have we got, about 5 minutes, 6 minutes? How long have we got?
We are down to 4 minutes and 58 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, if I could just say a couple of words then before the close of the show, if that's all right. Firstly, yes, Sonny, thank you for calling in. I really hope we hear your voice again. It's good to hear a voice like yours on a show like this. There was a bit of feedback. If in between now and the time you next call in, you could get your microphone or your audio equipment checked out. It might just be something simple like changing the microphone or the headset that you're using for your Skype call. So that would help, but we'd really like to hear your voice. The other thing I'd say is about the plaque for Lee Rigby, yes, without question, we should have a monument to put up to say to everybody, this is the place where a brave soldier lost his life on the streets of London. And ideally, if the truth were told, it should say on it, he died in the service of this country fighting a terrorist ideology. I don't suppose for a moment the council would allow words like that to be put on the memorial because it would be far too close to the truth, and we know what politically correct councils are like these days. But nevertheless, we should have a monument in his memory on the streets of Woolwich, where he was murdered by these two animals. So I agree entirely. We should get something. And what I would say is that when people who are applying for this plaque, if they're thinking of getting up some kind of a protest or something, yeah, that would be great. But just look at, for example, people like Pamela Geller have done in order to try and get monuments to some of those victims of Islamic
in Canada in particular.
Yeah, specifically AXA Parvez in Canada. Thank you, Kel. She went through, jumped through a lot of hoops against a lot of opposition before she eventually got a monument raised. And be prepared for opposition, for those people who are thinking of doing this and who can actually make a difference by talking to the right people and getting something underway. Be prepared for a lot of opposition, but remember that opposition can be overcome. We are the people who have truth, goodness and righteousness on our side, and we must never forget that in everything that we have to do in the battle that is coming, the storm that is coming. So never forget that, and take an example from somebody like Pamela Geller, who's already been through this kind of thing. You'll find all the details about it on her website and her blog, so take some inspiration from that when you think about how you're going to make something like this happen.
Well, what can I say? You fitted everything there, Tim. Well done for those great words. And as you said, we know we're always going to... It's not as if we've never had opposition to what we've ever tried to do. But we can overcome it, as you say, Tim. And I've just had that lady shouted in my ear, "You got 90 seconds." So with that, Kel, would you like to just make your closing statement just before we play ourselves out for the Going Underground? So, Kel,
I want to thank everybody for joining us. And, of course, I want to thank Sunny England for joining us on the air. And, Sunny, hey, I'm going to be Skyping you later, okay, there, EDL Gorgeous?
I've
just been told I've got about 40 seconds left now, so
okay.
Thank you all, guys. God bless, take care, stay safe, and not forgetting, no surrender ever. Good night, guys, and we're going underground. Good night, Jeff. Once again, we're into archive. My goodness me.
another show.
Hi, guys.
Another show. Oh, underneath our belts, my goodness me. I've got to apologise because I was experiencing, it was giving me a headache, actually, the feedback I was getting. So it's just these things happen, doesn't it, guys? What can you say? It just throws you off your game plan as well.
I've noticed this with one or two callers in that you do get a lot of feedback sometimes, and I suspect it may be what they're actually using to connect with. There are special Skype headsets which are designed specifically for Skype conversations, and I'm sure that they have slightly different audio characteristics compared to, say, just using your PC speakers and your PC microphone. I mean, one of the problems of using your PC speakers and PC microphone, as I'm sure some people do, is you start getting the noise from the speakers coming back through the microphone much more readily. And, of course, you don't get that when you've got a headset. So I think we ought to encourage people, not necessarily on air, and, you know, we don't want to make them look stupid, but we ought to perhaps suggest that if they haven't got a specific Skype recommended headset, because they're not expensive, they're only about 10 quid for a reasonable one.
Very reasonable.
That they ought to invest in them, because it will make all the difference to the quality of the call and the ability to get the message across.
Yes. That's a very good point there.
A lot of that is BTR as well, because I've explained this to guests in the past, is that Blog Talk Radio, they have a great interface, and when you use the landline, things generally go without a flaw. But they're not Blog Talk Radio. You're not Blog Talk Radio compatible. No, but they're not Skype compatible. What's going on.
Yeah, you'd think by now, Kel, that they would have sorted that issue, because it's been an ongoing situation for quite a long time now, hasn't it?
Oh, well, it was getting frustrating, too, because, Jeff, you weren't... I was sending messages, and they weren't being transmitted to you, and so that was getting frustrating for me, and I think, you know, it's not your fault, it's not my fault, it's just the interface, and it was getting frustrating at one point, and I was actually yelling...
Well, I'm sorry to hear you had that sort of problem as well, Kel.
Oh, boy. But, yeah, it'll get itself sorted. I was speaking with Mike Holt about this, and Tim in particular would relate to this, in that Mike suggested that perhaps they're using a borrowed interface. I don't know exactly. And I was speaking with another radio host, in that Blog Talk Radio, they actually transmit somewhere out of Europe. I'm not too sure. I think he mentioned Russia. Okay, I don't know if that has anything to do with anything.
I don't know. I think if there was any serious attempt to interfere with the communications, you would lose communication wholesale. I don't think you'd get a minor interference in sound quality. I think you'd just lose things wholesale, and they wouldn't come back, or at least they wouldn't come back in a few minutes. I think I would be pretty confident in saying, if you're going to have an attack on the ability of people like us to communicate over Blog Talk Radio for political reasons, we would really know about it. We would lose major sections of our ability to communicate, and not just have the occasional sound quality problem.
Another
reason why we have to exchange our landline numbers, because you never know. I don't know. I think the whiner in chief is gearing up for something, and that he's going to have another conniption fit in the Oval Office within the next couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, Blog Talk Radio has been experiencing quite the devastating hiccups, in that they're shutting down chat rooms, they're shutting down entire shows, they're shutting down, you're in midstream, and all of a sudden the airwaves go dead. So I don't know if that, maybe I'm putting my tinfoil hat on, but maybe it's not necessarily Blog Talk Radio, but the powers that be beyond, I don't know.
Well, I think it's hard to really speculate. I mean,
But, you know, you probably wouldn't be too far wrong either, Kel. You know, there's lots of things that people can do to cause radio hosts all sorts of problems, especially with what we do, you know. And, you know, and it's doesn't go beyond anybody's powers not to create problems. And, you know, as I say, all of a sudden the show goes down midway through. You know, that sort of thing. I should think we've been pretty lucky, Kel, the time we've been, you know, doing our shows, that yes, now and again we get some that fluctuate and we get issues with the quality, this, that and the other, but we haven't had any. Yes, we know other friends have had where shows have been,
yeah, that's
totally
true.
Wiped yeah. out, but we've been pretty lucky. I know myself and you, Kel, that we haven't experienced too many problems like that, which we could say, you know, it's an outside source that's been creating the problem. But we can't really say, because we haven't got no foundation one way or the other, have we, to say whatever. It could be, as you say, just, you know, technical issues, you know, which is out of our control. Because we don't know, and let's be honest, until we do know, we can't really speculate too much. It just it puts us into the conspiracy people. we don't like being involved with the class of being conspiracies.
Yeah, I know. But it's just, it's
we get put
it's
in separate rooms for that, don't we, Kel?
Oh, but you know, Jeff and Tim, it's slightly embarrassing, especially when you start up a brand new show and it's your debut show and you're speaking with a rather distinguished
yes.
gentleman like Liberty GB, and yeah, it does not bode well for my ego, let's put it that way.
Oh, you handled it fine, Kel, and they like you. That's an important thing. They want you back.
Excellent.
They want you back, Kel.
Yeah, they want you back.
Gleefully rubbing my palms together.
Yeah. They're not going to pay you anything for it. Don't get me wrong. But they just want you back.
Oh, so I'm not going to get that 50% raise?
Oh, well, you might get a 50% raise, but you know what they say, 50% of nothing is nothing.
That's right. Oh, I know.
Yeah, but it sounds good, though, doesn't it? 50% of nothing?
Yeah, yeah.
I produce for another show, and it's on Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, and that is with Rooster, and that is the Rooster Crows at Night, or Freedom Outcry is the proper name of the show, but we call it the Rooster Crows at Night because that's his tagline. But, yeah, Freedom Outcry, and I produce on that. And he always says to me, you did such a fantastic job, I'm going to give you another 50% raise. Oh, that will buy my fairy air.
Well, we got to say it quite openly, though, Kel, that, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, you hear us joking and this, that and the other, we give you another rise. But you know what, ladies and gentlemen, this is all voluntary. What we do off our own backs. We haven't got any funds that comes in to help us. We do this because it's the love of what we do. We're patriots. We love our country, and I do what I do for the English Defence League because it's so important that what we talk about needs to be put out there. So, and this is voluntary. I don't get paid for doing what I do, and I don't want to be paid because it's what I'm putting back into doing what's right for this country and for the people, and not just for this country, but for other great nations around the globe. That's why Kel's here. This is why Tim's here. It's so important. This is the reason why Vito and Al and the Radio Jihad Network, it is so important for us people that we do the right things, and it's not about the money. It's, you know, my goodness me, if it was about money and that, we could all be making money doing what we do, but it's not about money at all. It's about us doing the right thing, being patriots, love of one's country, caring about what's going on and caring about the future. And that's why we're here. And that's why we're here week in, week out. And it doesn't matter. We're going to be here for the long haul, aren't we, guys?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Certainly are.
And, you know, with Tim, he's... you know, he's come on leaps and bounds, Tim, as well. And just, you know what, Tim? I think that you've opened a lot of opened a lot of people's minds and eyes to what's going on. As mate, you know, which we've always said, check it out yourselves. Don't listen to what we say. This is why you're great at putting links in for people. If they're in the chat room, they can check the links and they can pass the links along. And this is what it's all about. This is the information that we talk about. It's so important that people get the right information, not misinformation like we do from our media. Like we get from the media and we get from our politicians. We like to give them the true facts, even though it can be quite painful sometimes, some of the information that we put out there, which we've relayed on numerous times, haven't we, Kel? And we found it very distressing to read some stories, but we thought it's only right, even though sometimes it's a bit graphical, and it's took our breath away. I know a couple of times that I've done things, and Kel's done things. It just takes your breath away, doesn't it, Kel, when you're reading it? The severity of some of the things that we talk about, but it's so important that you, the listeners, get that information, you know, to know exactly what is going on and the evilness. And it is pure evil, some of the things that we come across, isn't it, Kel and Tim? It's pure evil. We can't call it nothing else but evil. And we are fighting evil, and we will prevail over it as well. So,
well, for my part, all I can say is if I've done a little bit to help wake people up in the time I've been on Blog Talk Radio, then I'm very pleased. But I must say, I couldn't have done it with either of you two guys, because it wasn't so very long ago, about 8 or 9 months ago, I didn't even know that Blog Talk Radio existed, and been very supportive of me, and I'd like to thank you both very much for everything that you've done and helped me along the way. So thank you both.
Well, it's my pleasure, Tim. And what can I say? They all say like minds will always meet. It's like magnet, you're drawn. It's like when I met Kel, we were drawn to each other, like with you, Tim. It was only right that we was gonna cross paths, and we was gonna go down the same path, the same journey together, and with Kel and with people like Vito and all the great people like Paul Weston, you know, all the great people out there. And they're great in my eyes. They're all heroes. They're all great people. And Tim, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad that we met. You know, and
yes, indeed,
same
yes.
with Kel. What'd I done without Kel? My wingman. What'd I done without my wingman?
Oh yeah. I tracked both of you down. Yeah, that's what I do best. I track people. Yeah, I'm a regular Dexter, but I look for the good people to pick up.
She loves
not
that
the bad
show,
people.
Tim.
Not the bad
Didn't
people.
You, Kel,
remember?
Love that show?
But oh yeah, that's the thing. I had no idea what Blog Talk Radio was until a few years back, and somebody put in my Facebook page, "Oh, you got to listen to this guy," and I'm, well, you know, well, what is this? And it turned out that was Holger's show, Jeff. And so I listened to it, and I thought, oh wow, this guy's really good. And what's this Blog Talk Radio stuff? And what are all these shows that they have? They have in one category alone, there might be 30 shows, and it's like, oh, politics, conservative. Oh, I'm totally digging this. And I was listening to a radio program, and I heard this cat meowing away, and I was thinking, who on earth is this? And it was just fortunate that the radio host mentioned that he had a Twitter account, and so I went to that Twitter account. I said, who are you? Hi, my name is Tim. Would you like to be on my show?
Yeah.
Well, and the same with you, Jeff. I never would have found you if it hadn't been for Poppy. And she
well,
emailed.
You
got to listen.
If you, Kel, if you'd have gone into the computer section, you'd have found me because I was in the wrong section.
The computer section. Oh, that was funny. Oh, yeah. When Jeff first started to his show. He was a category computers. Like, how did you do it? What on earth
are you doing? Well, I thought I had to be somewhere around there, but I was totally wrong.
He entrusted me with his passwords, and it was all sorted.
Yeah, I didn't even have know how to do a chat room, did I, Kel?
Yeah. I was talking with him, Tim, and I said, Jeff, you do realize you have a chat room you can utilize. Where do I find that?
Yeah. It's true, Tim. It's true. I was raw, wasn't I, Kel?
Oh, you were, it was good, though. I still love your very first episode. Am
oh,
I live?
I go red every time I listen to it now, Kel.
You
heard
know
all
I'm
the
not,
beeping
oh,
in the
I
background
saved,
when I was on the house as well. Oh, God.
I saved that bad boy.
I mean, I knew about Blog Talk Radio, as I say, because I've done two interviews. I was representing the EDL, like I was being a spokesman. And I was on two shows. That was on Power Talk Radio, one of the radio networks on the Power Talk thing. And I was asked if I'd like to do an interview about the EDL and that. And I said, yeah, of course I would. And then, as I say, I've done two interviews with a guy called Eric. And I don't wish to go comment no more about that gentleman because he turned out to be et a brute type of a person, as I say. You know, less said the better, but don't give him any more highlights of what he's got already. But I was when we finally, because I was asked at the time if I could possibly, because it's when the United States Defence League was just kicking in. They just started around about February. And, you know, Andy Reynolds at the time said to me, Jeff, he said, you got a few connections on the radio. I said, well, yeah, on the Blog Talk Radio, got a person I've done a couple of interviews in. He said, I was wondering if they'd possibly do an interview with, I can't remember a name now, Renee. Was it Renee? Renee? I can't remember a second name now, but it was Renee.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah.
You remember, I think you talked to her before yourself, but she was very much a prominent part of the United States Defence League, wasn't she, at that moment in time? I said, would you like to do
you're thinking of Rene Russo. It could be.
No, it was Rene something, but no, it wasn't Rene Russo.
Oh, okay.
No, it was, But anyway, he said yes, because, you know, we just wanted to give them more, you know, a bit of publicity as such, because they was pretty new. We all said we'd help out whatever way we can. So he said, yeah, okay. So he done two great shows for her. And then after that, all of a sudden, his whole feature changed. And then this show that I listened to, he was totally condemning and attacking, the EDL, myself and everybody associated with it. It was totally, I felt embarrassed because, what can you say? I spoke to Ivan at the time and Andy, I said, I'll tell you what, the time has come when yours truly is going to have to stand up and be counted, because I'm going to start up, you know, I will start a radio show for on behalf of the English Defence League. I said, are you? I said, yeah, I'm going to do it. and I thought myself, my old heart was beating. I thought, well, come on, Jeff, get your finger out. And that was it. That was the past history. And yes, it was a few boo-boos along the first couple of episodes, as we know. But that came to pass. But there you go, Tim. You've had the how I started in the whole thing. I mean, for many years. I mean, that's why I found it quite, you know, pretty straightforward to get involved with the radio side of things. Because, you know, as Kel knows, I was very much a prominent part of Pal Talk. So I had a Crusader Castle open, you know, for quite a while. So I was used to, you know, talking to people and how to conduct myself and be G-rated. And as you know, we don't do much swearing on the show. It's not if we can help it. It's just the way that I was always used to conduct myself in a G-rated room.
And especially when you've got, you know, families with children and that listening, we don't want, you know, to hear people left and blinded all over the place. It's just not on, is it? So that's why we've always conducted ourselves really on the show, haven't we, Kel?
Absolutely. And we don't say, yeah, we don't drop the swears or anything like that. We might get the odd bollocks out there, but hey, you know what?
Yeah, we do the bollocks. Well, we go, after a certain time, we can give the bollocks as much as we want, go. Well, we said twice. But, yeah, Kel, I can't, you know, I think when you say bollocks now, I just roll up because, Tim, you got to admit, mate, it was one of the most funniest things to hear Kel all of a sudden dawn on her that the word bollocks meant testicles. It was amazing. It was that moment in time that I'll never forget. Kel, that was so funny.
Oh yeah, Tim heard it. Yeah, we played that MP3 there last week. Oh yeah, Tim heard of my ignorance, and actually I got a lesson from
it. It wasn't ignorance. It was funny. It was comical. It was.
I know how to say oi oi now. I used to say oi oi, but it's oi oi. Thank you, Tim.
That's right.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I was going. The thing that got me as well is one of the shows that we did that I know. Kel, and I know Tim, you probably listen to it, and if you like me, Kel, we still had tears rolled down our face. We talked about the flatulence and that, and it was the way that it was. I let you tell it, didn't I, Kel? I thought, I can't do it, I'm going to be laughing too much. It was amazing.
Oh, brother. But you know what? We're getting on here, Jeff, and
I'm getting to the 5:55
mark, I just get absolutely paranoid that we're going to get kicked.
Yeah, but you know when you say we're getting on now, I've got bloody Father Time knocking at the door.
But it's not Christmas yet.
Put that bloody thing down, mate. I ain't coming with you. Go away. I've got to admit, you know, I really enjoy this time of the evening where we can just have a chat about just normal things and that, and have a bit of a laugh amongst ourselves and. Tim, it's always great. It's great honour and privilege. I always say that because you always make me giggle. You say things that's so funny. And Kel, you always make me laugh.
It seemed to strike a chord in the chat room when I explained that Allah was a Cockney. That seemed to go down really well.
You've got a Cockney fatwa against you now.
Yeah, cool. Bang to rights, mate, and no mistake. Oh, blimey, love a duck.
Oh, God.
What's he like, Kel? What are we going to do without him, eh?
Well, I mean...
No catnip treats for him tonight.
No, the thing is, I have to let you into a little secret here. I am actually a genuine Cockney insofar as I was born within the sound of the Bow Bells in London, which is what makes you a Cockney. So I'm entitled...
No, Tim, you're not
true.
Really?
Absolutely true. Yep, not a word of a lie. Born within the sound of the Bow Bells in Islington.
No way.
Yes, indeed, in London. So,
you're
yeah.
Those Appling pears, my goodness gracious.
Yeah. So, go blind.
Well,
this is
breaking news. Ladies and gentlemen, we find out that Tim is really an old Cockney.
Yeah,
there you go. It's amazing.
Well, I must say that I find that highly exhilarating.
Oh, well.
I'm intoxicated by that information there, Tim. I did not know that. I'm euphoric. I'm enchanted. I'm ecstatic. I'm so totally delighted.
And as I would say in my old Cockney accent, nice one, geezer.
Yeah, nice
one.
Oi. Yeah, cool blimey, love it.
Sorted. Isn't it, Tim? Sorted.
Yeah, sorted. Sorted.
But no, thanks, Tim. This is what I like, as I say, some of the information, and I would have never believed it until you said that, but
sometimes I hear a little bit of Cockney now. I think, my goodness me, where's that come from?
I hear it all the time. Yep. Especially when you gentlemen say, I went to me store. I hear it all the time. It's like, oh, there's the Cockney.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, you know what, Kel? I think we better... have we got anything that we could just finish on the show this evening?
Yes, absolutely do. I think that our outer should be that we are going to set the world on fire.
Yes. Why not? Here's the matches, Kel.
And the gasoline.
Yes, yeah, it. Can of petrol.
Off the gasoline.
Yeah.
But anyway, guys, as I say, this is going to be our exit theme for this evening. I hope you've enjoyed this part of the our archives. And, yeah, we get a bit nostalgic now and again, but why not? it's good to people know that what we're all about. There's Jeff, Kel and Tim. We're just having our little chat at the end of the show. But with
there
that, Kel, I'm going to pass the mic over to you. And let you play our exit tune tonight. Good night, guys, from myself, from Tim, from Kel, from all the team, from everybody. You have a good night, and we'll see you again tomorrow. So over to you, Kel.
You bet. And good night, Jeff, and good night, Tim. I'll see
yes.
you both back here tomorrow night.
Yeah, good night, Kel. Good
night,
Jeff.
Well, that's a wrap for the night, Kel. Thank you so much for what you've done. Great slides as usual, Kel. Absolutely awesome. So thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Jeff. And wait until everybody sees the slides for tomorrow night's show. And there's a story behind all of them. Jeff and I are going to have story time tomorrow night. So try to be there for that.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, this can be great. As I always say, Friday nights, we always do something a little bit special. Am I right, Kel?
You betcha. You betcha, Jeff. And with that, I am going to let you go. I bet your tea is cold.
Yep. Okay, right, well, I'm saying, this is the English Defence League radio station. We're signing off for tonight, but we're not going to go too far away because we'll be back 8:30 tomorrow evening. So good night, guys. Take care. Stay safe.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
No surrender ever.